podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is part two of our World Cup special. I'm still joined by Mo Stewart, by Dan Austin, by Ian Ryan, and by Neil Atkinson. I'm John Gibbons, and I'm going to be hosting this free show. And if you haven't listened to part one yet, do listen to that, first of all, because it was really good. But secondly, you know, you like to do things chronologically. It makes sense. But we're able to do both of these shows for free thanks to our ongoing partnership with Redsbet. We're made up. They came on board with us at the start of the year, and because they support us, we're allowed to do even more stuff for free. So thanks to them. We do encourage you, if you do gamble, to gamble with Redsbet, because 50% of losses go into supporter causes. They'll be getting stuck into the World Cup. They've got a fantasy league, which I'll talk about right at the end, but also obviously they'll be doing bets throughout the tournaments. One thing they're doing at the moment is offering enhanced daily odds, as well as a coming off of running where you bet £25 on the World Cup winner and earn a £10 free bet for any goal by any Liverpool player scores during the group stages. So if you fancy Mo Salah to bag against some of the teams he's playing against, you can get a £10 free bet for any goal any Liverpool player scores during the group stages when you bet £25 on the World Cup winner. There'll be lots of other specials on Redsbet as well, so do have a look on their website, but do remember to gamble responsibly. So yeah, so we're up to Group E. Group E is our next one along, and it is Brazil, who were the top seeds on that. They're also joined by Switzerland, by Costa Rica, and by Serbia. You watched Brazil recently, Dan. We had our top scouts on the ground to watch them play at Anfield. They look good, it should be said. They looked even more impressive in the latest friendly, I think, than they did against Croatia. They've got attacking talent. They seem to have a decent purpose. A reasonable balance about them. You just worry whether there's a little bit of still a hangover from that last World Cup and how that ended.
Yeah, they were really impressive in that Croatia game. I think they beat Austria 3-0 recently as well. I think what impressed me most about the Croatia game was the first half. They were fairly ordinary. They were perfectly functional and efficient and everything, but they didn't have an awful lot going forward. And then second half, they brought Neymar on, which I assume was probably for contractual economic reasons. Chevrolet wouldn't have been happy.
And you don't want to mess with Chevrolet.
Absolutely not. And they brought him on for Fernandinho, and Fernandinho had originally been part of a three-man midfield with Casemiro and Paulinho. So it was very athletic and stuff, but not really an awful lot beyond that. So Neymar came on, he went left wing, they dropped Coutinho back to midfield, and they were a different football team. They just had loads more link-up play. There was just so much more buzz about them going forward, and just him being on the pitch seemed to lift them an awful lot more. And again, it's a friendly, so I don't know how much you can necessarily read into that, but from when he came on, it felt like they just had a lot more control over the football match. And I think certainly in those group games and against the other teams that you listed there, they will be in full control for the whole thing. And I just think that they've got the star players there. You know, everyone's going to be excited about watching Neymar and Coutinho and Willian and whoever else. But the back four is really good, and the goalkeeper is really good. And as much as the whole squad is strong as well. Like, I mean, Fred has just gone to United for, what, 45, 50 million. And Firmino's probably not going to get much of a game. And the likes of Tyson are also going to be on the bench and stuff. But just purely in terms of the first 11, I think they've got the best first 11 in the tournament. And again, it's one where it really feels like it's their time, because three of that back four are in the 30s, Marcelo, Miranda and Thiago Silva. And if Dani Alves was fit, he'd be there as well. It's only because of injury that they're going to be starting Danilo. Casemiro has just come off the back of winning three European Cups in a row. It just feels like they're all really in the prime of their careers. And they've got a manager that they all seem to believe in, which with Brazil isn't always a guarantee. They've gone back and forth with Dunga about three or four times at this point, haven't they? He seems to have really found a way of getting them between a balance of loads of star names and being efficient and being able to work as a team. And I think they'll get comfortably through that group with three victories, and they're pretty much my favourites to win the whole thing.
Do you go along with that, Ian?
I would, Gibbo, to be honest. I think Dan touched on the point there around obviously the new manager coming in, and I think I read something this week where it said Brazil have got the swagger back, and watching them in kind of recent friendlies and stuff, it certainly seems that way. And they've got that perfect blend, haven't they? You know, talk about the back four being quite solid, and also the midfield. Obviously, you know, our latest signing can't get near the squad because they're obviously, you know, the blessed in that area in terms of having two guys who can sit and protect and dictate. And then when you talk about forward players and you talk about the likes of Neymar, who, you know, at 26 years of age now sits only 22 goals off Pele and being the record goal scorer in Brazilian history, they've got to have a chance. And that group, you can't see any problems, to be honest. I can barely see Brazil maybe conceding a goal, let alone dropping points. And they are going to go deep. There's no doubt about it. And whether they win it or not, I certainly think they'll be close. But they've got loads and loads of options from the bench. You know, Tite this week said, you know, Firmino, for instance, will really push Jesus close for that starting place. You would expect Jesus to start, but no, the options they've got, Gibbo, you'd have to say that they've got to be, you know, one of the favourites. And for me, I agree with Dan. I could see them going all the way and winning it.
If they do, they're probably going to have to beat Germany. And how much of a hang-up do you think that might be for them, Neil, in that, you know, it wasn't just a defeat, it was a humiliation, it was a, you know, an undressing in front of their own fans. And, you know, you talk about psychological impact and things like that. It must have effect, mustn't it? Or do you think 4 years has just been so long and they've played so much football since then that it won't be as much of a factor as I'm making out?
I think it will be a factor. I think it'll be a factor anyway. If... Let me put this the right way, to phrase this the right way. In order to win it, they're going to have to win a semi-final. Mm. So whether or not they have to play Germany or not, they're going to have to win a semi-final. And these players will know everything that's going to be talked about in the run-up to that semi-final. Mm-hmm. And you can do all the stuff around where you can prepare them for that and you can talk them through that and you can work on that. But it's actually quite difficult to do because you're simultaneously also saying to them, take one game at a time. And that, to me, is likely to be their biggest undoing. And... I think it's interesting when we keep talking about having seen them in certain friendlies and in certain games, and they've been picking really solid 11s, because it wouldn't surprise me if that when they do get to a quarter or a semi, they actually pick a really solid 11 and try and win it off the bench. And that might well be the approach. The approach being, it's absolutely fine for us if we come up against another really good nation to be 0-0 at half-time, lads. 0-0 at half-time is perfectly fine. And then we go from there. And we earn our right to play our football, and then we play our football. And I think that that's what you're going to see. But I don't think it is just Germany. But at some point, it would have to beat Germany. And if it was Germany in the semi-final, I mean, on the one hand, it's redemption song. On the other hand, imagine they go 1-0 down. Yeah, I mean, imagine that, and they go 1-0 down in the first 15. Honestly, you know, those lads would need, you know, if I was playing for them, I'd be rolling around on the floor to try to just get everyone a minute to get a breather and to compose themselves. So I think it is tricky. The squad's got a lovely balance to it. The way they've been setting up's got a good balance to it. I think there's an argument that you win this World Cup, you win most World Cups by being, you win most tournament football by being solid. And I don't like solid football, but I think there's an argument. So I think that they can go all the way. But as I say, I think that it's going to be tricky for them. But, you know, the other thing I think as well is I just think Firmino is better than Gabriel Jesus. And I do wonder, you know, if that's going to get resolved and sorted out. But I think if you ask Pep Guardiola, we'd rather have Firmino. And he's lived a life with both of them this season. And I would be more confident if they were picking Firmino.
I think I agree with that. I think it might be another one of those situations where Jesus starts the first game, but by the time they play their final game, Firmino might have made his way into the first team. What I would say regarding them going deep, because I think I agree with everything everyone says about the group. I think there's going to be no problems whatsoever. I like the fact that they've gone with the steel, but in some of the recent friendlies, they've also played Willian and Coutinho in the midfield three. So they're kind of preparing for that eventuality.
They feel like they're preparing to do a bit of both. That's what I'm sure. I think the manager's really thinking about it. He's managing it like, we're going to play seven games.
And I think that sells the team, obviously, that they're going to be preparing it like for lots of different scenarios. Regarding the whole Germany business, I think one of the things that's going to do them good is the fact that some of their key creative players weren't playing there. Now, all of the Germans were. There's going to be lots of them in that game if it does come up to the semi-final who were there before, and they're going to be thinking about it. But another thing that's key for me is that as much as Neymar is still the heart of this team, the kind of the golden boy, the one who everyone's looking to, I think if Neymar, for example, gets injured in the game before, similar to what happens in the semi-final before, I think Brazil will be a lot more confident that they could win that game without him.
Yeah.
And that even just having the confidence that they could do it means that they wouldn't necessarily get into the spiral that they were in before. There are some key guys like Thiago Silva, for example. He's someone who is potentially susceptible to that spiral. But again, you've got Marquinhos there who could quite easily come in for him. I mean, in terms of their depth, the only real potential weakness is right back, where they've got Danilo. But then you've got Fernandinho, who can play right back and has done it very well. So you're looking at Brazil really either failing at the crunch point, which I'm more confident they won't do, or beating themselves, which again, I'm more confident that they won't do this time. So yeah, they're probably my favourites as well.
The other three teams are Switzerland, Costa Rica and Serbia. And I think all kind of will expect to go through in a way, and not all of them can. In fact, only one of them can. Switzerland have, I can't remember the last time Switzerland didn't qualify for the major tournament. Now they've got a good record and I think some good players, although they haven't really got a striker. Costa Rica did amazingly well last World Cup, and you know, they do well to do that well again, but in, you know, still will have confidence. And Serbia have got some good players as well. I don't know what you guys, just open up to the room really, what your thoughts are on the other three teams.
I'm really interested by Serbia. And I think Costa Rica can do it, and I think Switzerland have got the ones there. I think Serbia, with the new manager coming in, he's joined post-qualifying. No one really knows what to expect. They've got a couple of players in there who've developed across the course of the season, the obvious one being Milinkovic-Savic. Well done, Acho, first go. And I think that how they use him, and if they can use him, I think it defines a lot. And if he does have the breakout World Cup that he might have, I think he can have a big impact. You know, there's Mitrovic who's come into massive form.
Yeah.
So you're able to
score a couple. I think he got a hat-trick, actually.
You got a hat-trick, yeah. So I think you're able to make a bit of a case that Serbia could just sort of come alive. And they've got, you know, they've got Ivanovic, they've got Matic, they've got solid footballers who've been around the block a little bit as well. So I, you know, Serbia, what I'd say, the really interesting thing about Serbia is I think you wouldn't want to get Serbia in the last 16. If Serbia get out the group, then you could be dealing with a really good side who could scare whoever it is that they can get in the last 16. We're going to come on to talk about Group F. So I think that Serbia, I think Serbia could be, I'm trying to phrase it like, Costa Rica go out last 16, I think. I know they didn't last time, but Costa Rica go out last 16. Switzerland go out last 16. I think if Serbia get out the group, there's every chance we're talking about a quarter-finalist.
You've watched a lot of Lazio
yep.
this season, Mo. So what do you make of this star man? There's talk of sort of £90 million bids for Manchester United and all that. Is he as good as the hype suggests?
I don't know, because there's a lot of hype, but he is a very, very good footballer, and he can put himself in a position to make this World Cup one of which we're all talking about him for. But again, Neil makes a really good point, is that the manager's still new. He's still kind of working out where everyone goes. You've got Nemanja Matic next to him, which we all know what he brings to the table. And he needs someone with the energy and the flexibility and the passing ability of Milinkovic-Savic next to him in order to help him play well. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. I see Serbia's biggest issue is the fact that, yes, Mitrovic has scored a hat-trick, but both him and Tadic are wildly unpredictable. They're unreliable. Reliably unreliable, the other way around.
I know what you meant.
Thanks. I enjoyed it. So when you get into the situation where they're playing against, for example, they're playing against Costa Rica, who they will go into the game feeling like they should be winning this game. This should be the one that helps us get in. If they do go behind and they miss a couple of chances, say they miss a penalty, they get a little bit tempestuous, which there are a few guys in that team who have got quite a temper. And in that white hot World Cup atmosphere, they might be experienced, but that hasn't stopped them doing stupid things in the past.
As a man who's done stupid things in the past, although not in Russia. Okay, I think we're all saying Brazil are going to go through, so I'll ask you left to right who you think will join them from Switzerland, Costa Rica and Serbia. Neil?
I've got to say Serbia.
Ian?
Serbia.
I'm going to go Costa Rica.
Oh, I love it.
I'm going to go Switzerland. There you go.
Again, all three teams selected there, so it might be an interesting group there. I've got to go for Los Ticos as an honorary member.
They're your lads, aren't they?
They are my lads.
By the way, this isn't who I want. This is who I think.
I know, but I'm the host, so I can do what I like. But, okay, we'll move on to Group F. It's got Germany, who are the top seeds, and joined by Mexico, Sweden, and Korea. Someone said they wanted to get on to Group F. Who was it?
Me.
Oh, you're dying. Come on.
So about if Serbia could do the business against Germany if they go through second behind Brazil. They probably can't. Now that I've seen them, just checked that it is Germany, and you've just told me as well. But Germany are a bit weird, and it said before that they find their way through tournaments a little bit, and I think they do. I struggle a little bit with the idea that they're putting all their eggs in the team of Werner Basket, which it looks like they are going to have him leading the line for them, and it might be a hell of a time he's got leading the line. But they've got their eggs in the team of Werner Basket. They've got some eggs in the Marco Reus basket, which is a good basket, but it's a basket with loads of holes. And then there's, you know, there's obviously Mueller, who you can rely on in these tournaments to a ridiculous extent. But I am sort of intrigued by Germany in that, again, if it clicks, there's every chance that they can go all the way. But I can see it sort of never quite clicking this time round in a slightly different way. I think they've obviously got some phenomenal players. And in fact, you look at the class that they've left out, that's always a bit of a marker. And, you know, I'm the one thing they've got, everyone's talked about this Confederations Cup thing, and I think the Confederations Cup thing's dead interesting because they've had the Confederations Cup thing and then they've broadly speaking gone back to the lads, and it's going to be really difficult for them to ride both horses. So they did brilliantly in the Confederations Cup, and they played a lot of younger players that people don't know. And the Confederations Cup, everyone's normally not that interested, and then they played really well. But they've gone back to the girls that brought them to the dance, and they've stuck with them. And I completely understand why. And it might just end up being weirdly a bit of a transitional World Cup where Germany have got the best squad in 2014, 2018 and 2022. And they win in 2014 and 2022 and they don't win in 2018. And I think that it might be a bit of one of them where there's a couple of them where they're creaking a little bit and there's a couple where they're not quite sure.
They don't let go enough. They don't let go quickly enough, you mean? So yeah. People haven't moved aside. And
I mean, it's a tough one, isn't it, Mo? Because it's the manager's the same as well. So he's thinking, well, I'm going to the World Cup and I'd rather have as few unknowns as possible. Mm-hmm. And so he's probably looking at it and thinking, you know, obviously he's left out lads like Leroy Sané, who's lit the Premier League up this weekend, but he must think, well, I know where I am with this guy. I know what happens to him when he's at a camp. Yeah. I know I've been to Brazil with these lots and they were brilliant and they got on and they gelled and I know where I'm going to be. And that's what sometimes makes it tough, doesn't it? When you've got a kind of a consistency in a manager. I wonder if it would have been a different manager, he might have picked a slightly different team. That said, I think they were the most impressive team in qualifying. They won all 10 games. They scored 40 odd goals and it was an easy-ish group. I think Northern Ireland come second, don't they?
Yeah.
But still, they're in a, you know, they know what they're doing, and you understand why Lowe's gone for the lads who know what they're doing.
Definitely. And it's one of the advantages that very few teams can have is that they've got lots of guys who they know that they know how to win tournaments. And when you've got a team in that way, it's almost tempting, or it's really tempting, to not rock the boat as much. I do take Neil's point, though. I think that when you're looking at the front three behind an inexperienced striker like Werner, you've got Müller, who is still reliable but didn't have his greatest season overall. You've got Ozil, who you could say ditto for and has literally just got himself a little injury. You've got Royce, who hasn't been injured, but everyone's kind of crossing everything and, you know, touching themselves to make sure that he doesn't get injured.
He can win in the World Cup if he doesn't.
He's good. The thing that Germany are thinking is that, well, okay, if you've got those kind of doubts over Royce and Ozil, you've also got Brandt and Draxler, who have the talent to be able to step up. But the problem Lowe has got is how much can he trust those guys? How can he make sure that they are ready? So say, if they don't start the tournament, if they start on the bench, after playing so well, as Neil said, in the Confederations Cup, if they play, maybe don't play well but win in the first game, these guys are sitting on the bench thinking, we could be doing a better job than those lot. And any dissension in that area, like between the coming guys and the guys who are in the team to begin with, that might be an issue for them. But again, this is one that would be a down-the-line issue because they will not have problems in the group, I don't think.
Both you guys, Dan and Ian, had Brazil as favourites, I think, to win it. Would Germany come behind that, or do you think there's other teams stronger going into this tournament?
Go on, Ian.
I was going to say, I mean, I think they're the two, for me, that you think look the strongest on paper. I think it's dead interesting with Love, because he's got history of six previous tournaments and he's never failed to make the semi-finals. So you absolutely know they're going to be there or thereabouts. That's what they do. That's what Germany always do. The options, the player options he's got are frightening. And the Leroy Sané thing, I think most people are in agreement that if he played for any other country, he'd be going to a World Cup. Interestingly, Hummels comes out last week and talks about, well, actually, he's never, ever come close to his Man City form for Germany in the games he's played. So, quite rightly, doesn't go, was the view of Hummels, which I thought was interesting. And then you got Marco Reus coming back into form after injury, comes back in Feb, gets 7 goals in about 11 games and looks really, really good. And I think if you're talking about a Marco Reus on top form, as Neil touched on there, there's a guy who can potentially win you the World Cup. And I've watched him numerous times, but that performance he gave at Anfield for 60 minutes, it's still one of the best performances I've ever seen from an opposing player. I have to say, it was right up there. So it's dead interesting, the Germany thing. And they've got a real knack of just finding the gears at the right time. So they'll get through the group and they'll do it in a typical German efficient way. And then they'll kick on. And there's real drive for them because they want to become the first team since Brazil in 62 to retain the World Cup. So there's that. They also want to match Brazil's record of having 5 titles. There's that. So you'd expect that Love will want to go out on a high as well. And this maybe will be his last tournament as Germany manager. So if Brazil aren't going to win it, Germany would be my next guess.
I don't think I'd have them quite as high up. I just think there are other teams with better starting 11s at this point. I completely understand why he would pick a squad that's made up of loads of lads that have won him a World Cup last time out. But then I think you look through at the individual names and why has he taken Mario Gomez that World Cup instead of Sane? Like, it's just really weird. Lots of the things that he's done, and I don't think they've got a change in them if a game's going badly in the knockout stages. I don't think they've got a shift of system.
Well,
or
that
a shift
would be
of style.
Mario Gomez, wouldn't it?
It would, but not in a way that I think would work. No, I think you could bring loads of pace off the bench if you had Sane and if you had Brandt and whoever else. But I don't know. I mean, they're going to get to the semis. I don't dispute that. But then I just think that other teams have got stronger starting 11s. I think that if you compare the starting 11 that they had and Argentina had in that final and then look at it now, I'd be picking Argentina over it, whereas back then I wouldn't have. I think the rest of the group's really interesting though, because I think any of the other three could get through. Yeah. Don't think there's a clear winner there. I would probably on balance expect Mexico just because it's what they do. They get knocked out.
You've never got to a quarter final.
They get knocked out every time in the round of 16, don't they? It's absolutely wild. And I think Hernandez will be really good for tournament football, because I expect the games that he play against those other two to be really tight and to be won by the odd goal, and he's someone who can come up with one. Real shame that it's not the same big fella, Miguel Herrera, on the touchline, going mad. He was great value in the last one. But in terms of individual players outside of that Germany team, Heung-Min Son is probably the best player in the group, and that could be well enough to drag South Korea through it. Sweden, I think, benefits from not having Ibrahimovic, to be honest. I think it just means that there's no onus on an individual player and they're not constantly looking to get the ball to one fella who's, what, 37, 38 at this point anyway. And they've got quite a few talented lads, like Forsberg. So I think that one will be a really interesting one to watch. I think Germany will be absolutely fine and probably win all of them in the group. And then on balance, I think I would go for Mexico, but it could be any of the three. And I think that's the only group so far where I've thought it could literally be any of the three.
Do you think it might be one of those situations, Neil, where when you play, your team helps? Because I'm with Dan. I think Germany win the next two, and then are they looking to rotate? And I know it's Korea. We've got them last. And so you're thinking about the draw and thinking, what is that one where, you know, the manager makes seven or eight changes, and look, they're all good changes, but it's still, you know, messing around with your team. And Korea might think, well, if we do need a point to go through them, then we're in a better position than, for example, Mexico, we play them first.
There's every chance, but then they've got to get the results as they go right the way through. But I think Korea can get out of the group, and I think that they've got, you know, they've got themselves a half decent chance. They've got themselves a half decent chance because there's no one else. You know, they're not. There isn't a Croatia, if you know what I mean, where they're looking at it all the way through. I'm worrying about that sort of that scope of side. So Mexico do tend to get out of these groups, but at some sort of point that record stops. So I think that Korea can get out. I think, again, it's another one where I expect we're all going to pick someone else around the table. I expect it all goes to the last game. I don't see how it doesn't go to the last game. I expect that this group's always going to be alive, and I think that that's significant. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really looking forward to the World Cup. I think there's every chance you're watching really good last group games combined with also watching really good knockout games. Mm-hmm. And I think the draws come quite nicely for that, in that everyone always wants a group of death, but I think it's almost good that there isn't one, if you know what I mean, and that the quality spread. Yeah. So what that definitely means is there's something on the line in almost all the group games at the very, very end.
Even the groups where there's one clear favourite in all of them, I would say that their other three are all thinking that they can win at least game. There are games they're going in that they could target. In this group in particular, I do take Mexico's World Cup pedigree. I weigh that against the fact that I think Sweden and South Korea have got a huge advantage of playing each other first. So if there's a winner in that game, the potential that it can give them to go on the run to then take on Mexico and then maybe get themselves into second place. If that game ends a draw, then obviously then the Mexico come right back into it. Conversely, I think Mexico are probably the best of the three to play Germany first up, because if they lose to Germany, then they've done that before. They know how to get out and go into the last two games saying we need a result in both of these in order to get there. So they can do it too. I'm looking forward to seeing how it shakes down. Dan's point about Song Heung-min being the best player outside Germany is 100% correct. And this group is close enough and his talent is high enough for him to basically win it through force of will.
Do you think he can lead the team in that way, Mo? Because obviously within Tottenham, he benefits from playing with a lot of good players, and he benefits from almost going a little bit unnoticed. Now he's going less and less unnoticed, it must be said, but he's able to kind of, you know, come in from deep and get on the end of things. He will be expected to lead this Korean team a little bit more than he does with Spurs.
Yeah, but that is true. I think that he's the kind of guy, personality-wise, who thrives in that situation. I think we've seen at times earlier on in his Spurs career, he was actually getting frustrated where he wasn't able to give what he wanted and wasn't able to get the opportunities to show as much as he'd like to. So I feel like he's been the best player of South Korea for long enough for him to be comfortable in that position. Obviously, World Cup's a different matter. You never know how someone's going to go into it. But I think he's the kind of guy who can thrive that way. And as you said, with some of the other teams, the fact that everyone on the team knows which way the bread's buttered, so to speak, is going to help him as well.
Okay, I think we'd all go for Germany to progress from the group, so I'll just ask you right to left. Mexico, Sweden or Korea? Mo?
After that, I'm going to say Korea.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Mexico.
Sticking with Mexico, Ian?
Korea.
Mexico just, but it's going to be horrible.
I mean, hopefully,
in a good way, horrible in a good way.
Okay, we're at Group G, we're finally at England, finally at the boys, Ian. I think, first of all, it does need saying that they had a nice touch, didn't they, in terms of the group. I think Belgium is one of the nicer top seeds they could have got. Panama and Tunisia, we're not expecting great things from as well. So they've got a nice group in terms of to get themselves together, to figure out what the best team is. Yeah, because I still think they're not quite sure. And also to maybe get a bit of momentum going.
Yeah, I'd say so. And I think I was chatting to Rob about this morning. In terms of England teams, this is one where maybe you struggle to dislike as much as some others in the past. I mean, which ones we're talking about, but I think Southgate's...
I mean, John Terry's gone.
Yeah, John Terry's gone. Hodgson's gone. I think Southgate's forging something that... It's much easier to get behind if you want to kind of do that thing. You want to get behind the England team. So he's obviously picking a lot of players in form. He's picking young players. And I think that's something you can get behind. But your point about the group, I agree. I think, you know, Tunisia up first. You know, they've had decent recent form. They only lose by the odd goal to Spain. Aspas scores the other night. Before that, they kind of get a 2-2 against Portugal. So maybe not quite as easy as some are thinking. But no doubt about it, if Southgate was looking at picking it or hand-picking a group, this wouldn't have been massively far away from what he would have chosen. You have to say it's all about who comes top and who finishes second. But England and Belgium, you can't see there being a huge issue. I think one or two players have given Southgate food for thought. I think Rashford played really well against Costa Rica the other night. I would probably look to start him, to be honest. I think he's already come out and talked about what he will do with his midfield. Well, he's only going to play probably one off Dyer or Henderson.
Yeah.
I think that may change depending on the opposition. So the deeper you go, you know, don't be surprised to see both of those lads if you suddenly find yourself in a quarter final against Brazil or Germany. So he's got options. I think, you know, Harry Kane staying fit and fresh is obviously key. You know, there's been previous tournaments where he's just not looked like the Harry Kane you see play for Spurs. I think he has got an issue around maybe the quality of his defenders. Obviously, he's very, very kind of wedded to this back three. And I think that's fine. And I think the back three works with the players England have got in a sense that obviously it gives them maybe a little bit more protection. But then you look at those three lads and you're thinking, well, John Stones, yeah, operating at a really high level under Pep. But then you start to look at maybe some of his other options. And whilst I think the likes of Maguire, etc., are decent Premier League players, if they're going to get thrust into some of these real big cutthroat games at a World Cup level, will it be a little bit too much for them? Possibly so. But it's one England will get out of, Gibbo. And I think if you look, you know, in terms of where they'll end up in the tournament, you know, you'll have to say, given who they'd meet in the second round, they're going to make, surely, or they should make the quarterfinals. And from there, you think they may struggle. But I suppose, given what's happened in previous tournaments, that wouldn't be such a bad tournament for England. They make at least the quarterfinals. But when you get there, as we know, anything can happen.
Yeah, you don't need 11 good players to win a World Cup, Neil. And people have done it with far less than that. Never mind a kind of a couple less than that. I suspect that England have got a few more options than we all thought about a month or so ago. You're looking at the 11 and there's decent options to pick. So, you know, Ian mentioned Henderson and Dyer there. They're both not likely to play. There's issues around Rashford, Lingard and Sterling, you'd think only two of those will play, or if he wants to play all three, then he suddenly wanted to leave out Dele Alli and thinking about what you want to do with the midfield. And these are all players who play for top level teams in the Premier League, and that's kind of my point, really. They might not be the most eye-catching players in those teams, although in Harry Kane's case he very much is, but these are all players who are used to playing for teams who win, who are used to playing for teams with a reasonable amount of pressure on them, and might just be going to this World Cup with feeling like they've got a little bit to prove.
They've got pace on the pitch and pace on the bench, and I think that's really interesting. And I think in the past when you've talked about England teams, that hasn't quite been there. So for instance, you know, the Lampard, Gerrard, Scholes, etc., which ones do we pick? Well, literally none of them were quick. And Gerrard was quick, but you know, he wasn't that quick.
He wasn't given much chance to be quick.
And he wasn't given much chance to be quick. And they've got pace on the pitch and pace on the bench. And I think that keeps you alive in almost any game and in almost any game situation. And in Kane and Vardy, they've got two lads who are very, very, very good at taking chances. You actually look at like Vardy's shot conversion rate, and in big games, it's remarkably high. He's used to this sort of thing, and he's probably not going to be the one who starts, but he's the one who can come on, and you know, he's dangerous. I think England are dangerous in this World Cup. I wouldn't want to face them second round or quarters. I wouldn't be interested in it, really, and I think that's really interesting. Normally you get the impression that, you know, an Argentina or a Portugal, they're almost rubbing their hands together at the thought of this, because these boys, they're going to come in here and fancy it, and they're going to try and play a bit, and we'll show them. Or it's the sort of the Hodgson era where it's Italy, and they're almost in Italy, just know we'll get to play the whole match on our terms. Mm. Whereas this side won't let you play. You know, that game against Italy, where the biggest pass completion was Joe Hart to Andy Carroll. You know, this England side's not going to let you play the game on your terms. They're going to, even if you've got the ball, they can spring on you, and they can spring on you with real, real pace. And if England were another side, we'd be talking about them as dark horses. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we'd be saying that they're the ones that you don't want in the last eight. They should reach the last eight, but they should very much go out in the last eight. You could see them being able to upset it a little bit and find a route against someone, which mostly involves not having the ball, waiting, and then someone pinging it 50 yards, someone's in, there's a decent little bit of delivery, and Harry Kane finishes it from 18 yards out, and suddenly you're 1-0 down, and now you're playing footy on the counter, and that's even worse. So I think they can do it. I just think, I don't think they can win the whole thing, and I don't think they will win the whole thing. And as I say, I think the quarterfinals will be about their level, but they'll almost have the sense themselves, they've got to earn the quarters. And then they get to the quarters, and if they've earned the quarters, they could earn one more step. And then I think it really would become a bridge too far where they could get played off the park and maybe even be made to look a bit daft at that stage. But, you know, I think it's an England side that's worth people being a bit excited about.
I was going to make a Vardy point as well, Mo, because I think we've looked at a lot of these teams now. You know, we're quite deep into it, one Group G, and a lot of teams you've said so far, yeah, got some good players, could really do with a striker.
Yeah.
And we've got Vardy there just sat on the bench and is not kind of able to get on. And there's probably a dozen teams in this World Cup who killed to have a Jamie Vardy up front. Yeah. And kind of England have got him to spare. And so that kind of makes you think a little bit as I say, there's Rashford, who I don't think he'll start as well, who's you know, I think he's a good footballer and has certainly shown Liverpool he's that this season. And so in terms of options, as in attacking options and midfield options, as I say, I think they're looking pretty good.
They are looking good. And the thing that seems different for me as well is that there seems to be a plan within using those options as well. As much as one of the things I saw in the recent friendlies when Vardy came on is that him and Henderson had a really good understanding in terms of being able to know when he's making the run and know which kind of ball Henderson's more likely to play. And that's one of the things that we've struggled with past as England, when everyone comes together from different clubs and they've all got their own different ways of playing, especially in that era where we had lots of stars at our own clubs who were used to people fitting around them, and then we have trying to fit together. There doesn't seem to be, I mean, it's easy to say now because they're less of big stars, but it doesn't seem to be as much ego around the team. Everyone seems to be able to, happy to fit in where they fit in and stuff like that, which is something that when it comes to England, I don't know whether or not it's because we're so close to it and we're in the spotlight, we see it more, but the mental side, the outside, the things off the pitch, or rather than the actual kicking of the football, tend to affect England more than they affect a lot of other people. And up to this point, I feel like Southgate he's got everything right for me in terms of taking the pressure off the team specifically, giving them the tools to say, okay, in this situation, we're going to do this. In this situation, we're going to do that. He has played with the three at the back. He's kind of stuck with
They're going to have to pick someone mad at the back, aren't you? That's the only thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the ringer for me is going to be whether he goes with Stones or Maguire. I still think that's up for grabs. I think Cahill's played his way into the starting 11. I do. I think that Southgate trusts him. More than probably a lot of the fans have trusted him in the past because of his form for Chelsea. But I just think when you look at the makeup of the three of them, Walker is obviously a lock, and his passing ability does help. His athletic ability helps and allows you to kind of mask some of the bits that Cahill's not quite as good at anymore. But in terms of tournament now, in terms of being an actual attacking threat as a centre-half, I think he's ahead of some of the other guys. In terms of the whole Stones-Maguire thing, it's interesting. I don't think the stats might say one of them makes more mistakes than the other, but John Stones is still in that situation where every time he makes any mistake, the whole world just holds their breath and everyone loses their minds. And whether that's fair to him or not, that's the case. And if that happens in the middle of a game and it causes ripple effects throughout the squad, that's something he's going to have to think about. I just believe that Southgate is someone who's sure in himself and his decisions. And again, that's an upgrade from the manager we had last World Cup, for starters. And I think it gives them the opportunity to go out there and play well. I also think the fact that if they did go out to Germany or Brazil in the quarterfinals, that that's not necessarily seen as bad as it would have been in the past, might actually help them as well. It might make them relax a little bit. So we might see the best of England.
I'm slightly concerned, Dan, that I'm going into the tournament saying I'm not going to be that bothered, and then he's going to pick Trent and I'm going to get a Real Britannia tattoo. I cannot rule that out.
Start painting a Model Spitfire.
I think he's going to pick Trent.
Oh, well, I'll get booked in.
Yeah, I think he's going to pick Trent.
I think that the whole point of converting Walker into a bit of a centre-half is so that he can play Keaton Trippier, and Keaton Trippier knows how to put a ball on Harry Kane's head.
I think there's an element to that, but I think what struck me was Trent got all the set pieces. When he played, he got all the set pieces. And there's something else as well, which is I think Southgate has shown his commitment to youth development. And I think that there's part of me that thinks...
23, 24, isn't he?
But my thing is, I think he probably wants Trent to have the summer off if he's not going to use him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's massive for Southgate to pick him. Yeah. And you'd also presume that he's had a conversation with Klopp. I sort of wonder if he might be a lot closer to playing Trent than I thought before, you know, than I thought 3 weeks ago, to be honest with you. Before Trent was in the squad, I'd have gone, he's definitely picking Trippier. He may not even put Trent in the squad. Now I'm beginning to wonder, this is all a bit, if you might just have thought, you know what, this is that, I'm going to go with that lad.
I think it's hard to underestimate just how perfect the draw has been for them in so many different ways, because if they could have picked a top seed, they probably wouldn't have looked much further than Belgium. They've got Belgium as the last group game.
Yep.
And whoever they play from Group H, there's four fairly good teams in there, but none of them are standout top international sides. And it means that despite the fact that I think they have got more options and are probably better than what I thought a few weeks ago off the basis of what they've done in the last few weeks, and I haven't actually looked at the squad properly.
Yeah.
But I still think that they're fairly ordinary. I still think that the quarterfinals are definitely their limit, but now I almost expect them to get to the quarterfinals because perfectly rational that they could get knocked out of the round of 16 by Colombia, for example. But I think they should expect to be Colombian. And then once they get to the quarterfinal, they are liable to play, I think it is, Brazil or Germany, and that feels like a bridge too far. But I think that for the squad and for this manager, the quarterfinal would be absolutely fine. And I don't think either of them or Belgium will have any trouble in the group because there's such a drop-off in quality.
What do you think of Belgium then? I mean, they've got Often Bobby Martinez managing them. They haven't had a brilliant tournament yet. Could this be the one, do you think?
I don't think so, because I think he's picked a sort of weird squad. He's left Radjani and Golden out of it, and he's Belgium's best midfielder. That goal that he scored in the Stadio Olimpico, where just sort of kicked the footy towards the net and didn't look like he was trying, and it flew into the corner off the post. It was incredible. And he's not picked him because he thinks that like his balance of his squad isn't right, and he's picked a lot of holding midfielders or lads that are really like strong and not really that technical on the ball, and there seems to be a lot of emphasis on Eden Hazard doing bits. I would have quite liked to have seen him try and fit Dries Mertens in there somewhere, but it seems from the teams that he's picking like Dries Mertens is going to be the man off the bench.
Yeah.
I think that the solid from 1 to 11. but I don't think it's going to be enough to beat a really top-level team. I think, again, they're going to get to the quarterfinals and they're going to come up against a top-level team and it's just going to be too much for them. And I mean, in terms of the size of the country that they are, and that should be pretty much all that they can expect, to be honest. But they have got a sort of golden generation in terms of what they've had in the past. You know, they weren't getting to tournaments in 2006 and 2010 and stuff. So it is an improvement for them, but I think they'll end up being disappointed. They'll be fairly comfortable in the group, and I think both them and England might end up playing against each other in that last group game with sort of second string teams, because it doesn't really matter who you play from Group H.
No.
You're not trying to avoid Brazil or something like that, and it's probably going to be pretty much level in that group anyway.
Yeah.
So they could just say, all right, this is free, it doesn't matter if you come first or second. But then once they get to that quarterfinal game, I think for both of them, that's where they'll both end up going out.
I think the other thing on the England potential chances, and it's been touched on a few times, Vardy gave an interview recently and he talked about the preparation for this one compared to the previous tournament, where they've planned for every eventuality in this tournament. What happens if you go ahead? What happens if you go behind? What happens if it's 0-0 on 80? What do you do then? And then there's that famous story last time where England were potentially going to play Iceland and Roy Hodgson goes for a boat trip with Ray Lewington instead of watching the potential opponents, and they come against Ireland and no one's got a fucking clue what happens when you go one behind. So I think this time the preparation is much, much slicker, much, much better. Dan's point around Belgium there, I think it's interesting. You know, if you look at their side 1-11, I mean, it's an outstanding football team. But you'd always look at Martinez and think, tactically, is he quite good enough at that top level to be able to get Belgium into a semi-final or even further? I suspect not. You know, if it was just based on 1-11, then they'd have a really, really good chance. But I think Martinez potentially is that weak link there. In the qualifiers, they'd be great. They won 9 out of 10. Lukaku scores 11 goals. But you just feel when it gets to the nitty-gritty that they'll just fall short.
He has a really talented team at the last tournament as well, and lost to Wales.
Yeah. I think one of the things in terms of the manager is that whether or not you agree with his decision to drop Nainggolan, he's basically made his job a little bit harder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
I don't think he's played much in the qualifiers, Nainggolan, though.
He's probably been left out. He hasn't.
I agree, it's a bit of a wild one. I'd have took him, but...
But if we're talking about them as a golden generation in the same way we just talk about England, the same way Portugal had to talk about theirs, and the same way Spain had theirs, is that you have a window where you're at the peak, your best chance to go out and do something in a tournament. We said that at the last Euros, and obviously they came unstuck against Wales. If they, for example, even if they get beat by Brazil or Germany, who are playing fantastic football, there's going to be plenty of people saying, well, if we had Nainggolan in that team, we would be better. So that means that he's under more pressure for his plan to work.
I disagree with everyone in the room on almost everything to do with Belgium. Firstly, we talk about managers. Most of these managers are fucking crap in the World Cup. Most of them haven't just, you know, Delaney was doing something, Miguel Delaney was doing something on Twitter the other night. Most of them haven't won anything. Most of them haven't proven themselves at any sort of level. A lot of them are past it. A lot of them have only ever done international football. I think Bobby Martinez is fascinating in that you can often sort of malign him as being rubbish, but then you think about some of those run-ins that he managed to pull together with Wigan, where they looked all but relegated, and he changed three things tactically, and they go and beat everyone home and away. And I think he's all right. I think the decision he's made on Nainggolan is brilliant in that he's decided it. It's sorted out now. He's not there. So he's got that sorted out. He's not going to there for every week or after every game have people going, why aren't you playing Nainggolan?
No, that's true.
Why aren't
true.
You playing Nainggolan? He's gone, I'm not playing him, and this is why I'm not playing him. He doesn't fit what I want. They've played the same way all the way through. They played 3-4-2-1 right the way through. He's committed to that. He's got three belting centre-halves if he can keep them fit. He's got three absolutely belting centre-halves. He's got one of the best goalkeepers in the tournament in goals. He's got three belting centre-halves, one of the best goalkeepers in the tournament. He's got Hazard, he's got De Bruyne, he's got Mertens, and there is a question as to whether or not he uses them, but he's got them, and he's got them off the bench. And they've also been using wing-backs, and they've been using really attacking players in the wing-back areas and getting results for it. I'm not saying that they're going to win it, but I really like them, and I think that they could do really, really well. And I think, you know, I they could well come up against it, and only one team's going to win it, but I think whatever happens, there'll always be a bit of a sob story for someone somewhere.
That's true. What I would say regarding him tactically, I do like the fact that he's playing De Bruyne in midfield. I do think that that's definitely going to help them, because a lot of the time in tournament play as well, when you've got a guy like Lukaku or Benteke and you're looking as a target man and it gets tight, maybe people are tired, you tend to try and bypass the midfield. But when they've got De Bruyne that deep, he's going to be controlling the play. He's going to keep them going within their tactics. So, yes, I mean, my point really regarding Belgium and regarding Martinez, it was more about how he's going to be perceived rather than how much of that's going to affect on the pitch. We don't know. What I would still say in the same way for England, whether to come up in the quarterfinal against Brazil or Germany, I still wouldn't fancy them to win. I think they'd have a better chance against Germany than Brazil, though. I would qualify that.
Does anyone have anything interesting to say about Panama or Tunisia? I think they're the two teams I know least about.
Panama have got the heaviest player at the tournament.
Oh, hello. Yeah.
Torres, centre-half, who scored that goal.
Love this. Them through to
it. Hey, tell you what. But yeah, is everyone expecting England and Belgium to go through?
Yes.
And do you want to pick a group winner then, or you're not bothered?
Belgium.
Ian?
I'd say Belgium as well.
Dan?
Yeah, I love Belgium.
Well, agreed.
I wasn't expecting a clean sweep there, but it happened, so there you go. Okay, the very last group is Poland, Senegal, Colombia, Japan. I like that it's from four different continents as well. That feels quite fun. And I think we touched on it before. Dan, you mentioned it, so we'll start with you. Just really even. Four decent teams. And yeah, it could be a good one in terms of matchups, could be a good one in terms of games, and you could pick any two really to go through.
This is my favourite group for loads of different reasons, because I think, yeah, any of the two of them can get through. There's some really good kits in this group as well. Japan and Colombia are absolute smokers. And in terms of the sort of like cultural aspect around it, people coming from every continent and all being a part of it and probably not knowing an awful lot about each other and playing in different ways as well, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think that if I were to pick a favourite from it, it would probably be Colombia because of what they did at the last tournament. And in terms of individual players, I think they've probably got the best sort of amount of them in that they've still got James and Falcao and Carlos Bacca still kicking about and doing quite well. David Ospina obviously is sort of much maligned at Arsenal, but has been a really good international keeper for them for quite a few years now. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they all do. Japan are coming into it off the back of really poor form and they've got a new manager and it doesn't seem to have quite settled well. But they usually do quite well in these kinds of things. I think they got to the rounds of 16 last time. Yep. Out of a fairly similar group to this, I think they had teams in there that were of a similar level to them and just managed to sort of through industry and a bit of talent from the likes of Kasuki Honda and Okazaki to make it through. Obviously Poland with the likes of Lewandowski and Blaszczykowski and Milik. They've got goals in them. I think it's really interesting, and it's one that, again, if you're talking about groups that are going to be alive at the end, I think it's perfectly reasonable that goes into the final round and all four of them can still get through, and it's not certain who's topping it and all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely it's the one that I'm looking forward to most, and I think without having a really standout team in it that you're looking forward to watch, I think that group's got the games in it that I'm looking forward to most, and especially with Mane in it as well, that's a bit of extra interest for us. And again, they've got a team that I think Idrissa Gueye plays for Senegal, doesn't he? And Koulibaly from Napoli. So it's a group that you probably wouldn't think of as having anyone that can get beyond the quarters. But I think there's a lot of value in them as entertainment before the quarters because, for example, I'm saying Brazil are favourite today, but I'm probably not that interested in Brazil until the quarterfinals because it's going to be fairly easy for them. Whereas this group, the teams that are in it are not going to get beyond the quarterfinals, but they're going to very much maintain my interest until then.
Yeah, I mean, Senegal have got a few stars, haven't they, Mo? When you look at the squad and you're like, oh, he's there, and he's there. And they're playing at all the good teams, quite a few in France. And I mean, Dan mentions Mane there as well. I think Mane's proved undoubtedly in this Champions League run that he's a big game player. You know, he's Liverpool's best player in the final. He's probably Liverpool's best player in Rome as well. And so he's coming into it in really good form. And I think there'll be a lot of pressure on him, but I think he'll certainly be able to deal with it. In fact, he'll probably relish it.
Yeah, and he's had to weather that throughout the whole qualifying campaign as well, because he has been their talisman for that period of time. Every World Cup, we go into it thinking one of the African teams are really going to break through that quarterfinal ceiling and really get into the meat of the tournament. And I'm less expecting that to happen this time than I have been previously, but I would be much happier if it happened with the Senegal side than previously, because I think that they have the potential to be, like Dan said, a really exciting team, really fun games to watch. And if they can go in and shake it up, I think it's going to end up becoming a better tournament for it, maybe than Poland. That might be unfair on Poland, but that's just...
You were a bit born in the Euros. Like. Well,
Poland's dead. The three sides, apart from Japan, Poland, Senegal and Colombia, are all dead interested because they're very much sides with best players. Mm-hmm. So Poland have got Lewandowski. Colombia have got Rodriguez. And Senegal have got Mane. And all of this is quite, you know, it's almost like who's going to get the best out of the best player right the way through this. So, because there's every chance that Poland will be really boring and Lewandowski could win the Golden Boot. Mm. Like, he genuinely could just score five in the four the games that they get to play if they get through the group and then go out in the last 16, and five could be enough. And you think that's absolutely crackers, but it could be true. Yeah. And, you know, I would, you know, Poland do not... you know, do not excite me in any way, shape or form. I feel like I've been watching the same Polish side my whole life as though they are just regens. The kit isn't ever even that good. So, you know, there's not a bit about it. They haven't got a Colombian Nazi weed pope, all the big hitters that you need. They haven't got any of that sort of stuff, but there's every chance they just do the business in this group, get out of it, because they've got Lewandowski. I don't know if Milik is back fit. Mo would more like to know that than me, because I know he was out injured with a bad injury.
Yeah, he's fit. He's not match fit. I mean, again, depending upon how they play, they're more likely to try and get him off the bench.
Have Germany, by the way, said they're going to buy Neuer? They're going to play Neuer?
Yes. Playing in these games.
Sounds okay. We should have mentioned that before, and it's been doing me heads in since. talk about long-term injured lads. So, no, I'm very much of the view... I'm very much of the view that this gets sorted out off the basis of who gets the best out of their best player. And I think that does ever so slightly open up the fact that I think it could be a bit of a... It could be that it goes the other way and Japan have the best team, et cetera, et cetera. But I sort of think Japan are going to be the ones who are toiling a bit in this group. But the other three are all more than capable of finishing first and second.
Where are you on it, Ian? It's hard to pick, isn't it?
It is hard to pick. I agree with Neil's point there. You'd imagine Japan probably come bottom of the pile. If I'm Gareth Southgate, I'm thinking I'll take Poland in the next round. I don't want Senegal and I don't want Colombia either. And I think the unpredictability of Senegal would worry you if you were an England fan. I think they've got potential to cause England real problems. But I think it's one of them, Gibbo. It's a really, really tough one to call. I think the whole Poland thing, Lewandowski thing, is really interesting. You know, there's quite a lot of pressure on him now. He's 29 years of age and, you know, by his own high standards, he's not had, you know, stellar tournaments. You know, you think of the last one, he gets one goal in open play and he doesn't really kind of set the world on fire. He's obviously, it's back to that point of he's not surrounded by great players, is he? He's surrounded by players who are just all right and he's the main man. But you're not going to get as much out of him if he's playing for his club team. So I think for him personally, he'll see this as his real kind of last opportunity to go and do something special. Whether that kind of, you know, backs up Neil's point there, you know, who gets the most out of the best player, not so sure. But I have to say, I kind of fancy Colombia and Senegal to do the business in this one and to maybe edge Poland out with Japan coming in a fourth.
Okay, you've gone for Colombia, Senegal, Dan?
I think I'll go for Colombia as well to top it, on the basis of they've already done it. James has already been pretty much the best player at the tournament before. Yeah. And then I'll go Senegal as well, because I think there's no sort of tight game in here. They're all just going to attack each other because they're all of a similar level and they all need to get points on the board. And I think Senegal are going to be better at doing that than Poland.
Well,
I think that Lewandowski can score as many as four goals for Poland and it's still not be enough. I think it's going to be a high scoring group as well. So I'm going to go with the same because the other guys, Colombia and Senegal.
I think it'll be one of Colombia and Senegal and Poland, and I think Poland will come second in the group, but they will just horror their way through it. and I think the very fact that, as Dan said, I think everyone else is going to attack, and I think Poland aren't. And I think they're just going to have the idea of we're just going to get through. Oh, we're going to have 5 minutes. Oh, Lewandowski scored. Oh, great. Let's just sort of start again. I think there's a lot to be said for your best player being a centre forward. Although Rodriguez does win the Golden Boot last time, so it makes a bit of a fool of me. But I fancy Poland.
Okay, I hope you've enjoyed that, both part one and part two. As I say, we've recorded these in associations with Redsbet. If you are going to have a little bet on the World Cup, then we encourage you to do so with Redsbet because they offer 50% of their losses into fan causes. So do have a little look at Redsbet. They will be offering enhanced odds daily along through the tournament, as well as the usual bets like who you think's going to win it. Do gamble responsibly. We don't encourage anyone to gamble who doesn't do so, but if you do enjoy your flutter, then we encourage you to do so with Redsbet. Don't forget as well that they've got a fancy football tournament for people who enjoy that. It's currently free to enter, although it's only for the first, I think, 1,000 people who enter, so do that quickly. The deadline is a really strange time. It's like 10 to 5 on Thursday or something like that. But try and get in before then. There's a £25,000 prize pool. But what I like as well, I think it's the top 200 who get some money. So you've got a good chance of doing well in that. So do check all that out. And thanks to Redbet for supporting us throughout the year and making this show that we're able to put out for free. But yeah, we're going to be doing this again at the quarterfinals, where you find out we got all our predictions completely wrong. But in the meantime, thanks to Mo, thanks to Dan, thanks to Ian, and thanks to Neil. I've been John Gibbons, and that is an Anfield Wrap World Cup special. Sports Social Podcast Network.